Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 544 of the Professional Book Nerds podcast presented by Overdrive. This is Jill. Welcome. It is Monday. It is May. And here we are. We made it to May. Good job, us. today's episode is an interview I did with author Jessie Q. Sutanto about her new book, Dial A for Aunties, which is just a delightful, delightful read about a wedding photographer who goes on a blind date and accidentally kills her date and then has to basically hide the body with the help of her aunts and her mom. And it's, I know, that does not sound hilarious, but it actually really is. It's a fun, fun book. So I encourage you all to read it. And Jessie was so much fun to talk to. And it just all over good time. Good times were had by all. If you want to get a hold of us, you can email us at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com. Our website is professionalbooknerds.com. We are on Twitter and Instagram at probooknerds. I think that's everything. Very quick, easy intro today, y'all. So I hope you all enjoy this interview I did with Jessie Q. Sutanto on the Professional Book Nerds podcast. Hi, everyone. This is Jill, and my guest today is Jessie Q. Sutanto. She is the author of Dial A for Aunties, The Obsession, and Theo Tan and the Fox Spirit. She has a master's degree in creative writing from Oxford University, though, as her bio states, she hasn't found a way of saying that without sounding obnoxious, which I think is fantastic. The film rights to her women's fiction, Dial A for Aunties, was bought by Netflix in a competitive bidding war. And as someone who has read the book, I'm very excited for that. So Jessie, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Can you start by giving our listeners a brief introduction to Dial A for Aunties?
Yes. So Dial A for Aunties is about a young woman who gets set up on a blind date by her very meddlesome mother and aunt. And, you know, it turns out to be like the blind date from hell. It just goes so bad. And she ends up accidentally killing him. And then she has to get the help of her mom and her aunt to hide the body while at the same time catering to the wedding of a billionaire. So, you know, pretty standard like blind date story.
What I love about the book is it's this like really wonderful mashup of kind of rom-com and romance, but also there's like situational comedy, there's some like, you know, like not quite mystery but kind of, and like how did you manage to balance all of that in one book and do it so well?
So it actually was meant to be a pure rom-com because my friends were teasing me and saying like, oh, you can't write a book without killing anyone. And I was like, I'll show you, I'm going to write like a really lighthearted rom-com. And then I came out with this idea and I was like, and everyone loved it when I told them, you know, the pitch. They were like, you need to write it, but where is the romance? And I was like, there will be romance. Like, it's a rom-com.
Yeah, that's true. Because, you know, like when you start it, you have Medi, like you said, she's like got this blind date, but then you have these flashbacks to this relationship with an ex-boyfriend who ends up making an appearance at the wedding. And yeah, there is romance in it, you know, so don't worry, listeners, there is romance in it. Yeah. I just, I like where, like, just the idea of yeah, she kills the guy on a blind date. And like, that's like right up front, like, you know that going into it. It's so absurd, yeah. And yet it somehow totally works.
Yeah, I've seen reviews where people said that they didn't read the, you know, the back cover blurb before they started reading. And so they actually thought it was just a rom-com. And then they were like, imagine my surprise when she ends up killing him. And I'm like, oops.
Well, it's funny because it kind of reminded me, there was like in the first season of Downton Abbey, there's a somewhat similar
episode. Oh my gosh, yes.
The oldest daughter, she doesn't kill the guy, but he does die, yeah. And she has to have help.
I so did not see that coming.
She has to like hide him and bury him and take care of it. And she did not have the luxury of a big walk-in refrigerator.
Yes.
So the relationship, you know, between Mehdi and her aunts and her mom is just wonderful. And is a big part of the book, I think, in that it's like this whole other story. And you just like this really warm family that you can tell really care about each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the fact that her aunts are like, yeah, we'll help you take care of this body. No questions asked. Did you grow up in a big family like that?
Actually, my family is a lot bigger than that, but it would have been too much to include the real size of my family, so I had to kill everyone off.
Well, there early in the book, there is this really delightful conversation that had me laughing between Mehdi and her aunts about text emojis. And, you know, there's like this sort of this whole thing with the blind date as her mom set her up, and her mom, you know, didn't really understand the text conversation happening. Mm-hmm. And I loved it because I think if you have parents of a certain age, regardless of culture, there's like this generational divide about texting and the emojis. And it was just wonderful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my mom read it and she was like, I didn't know that eggplant meant that. And she was also very horrified by it. I felt very judged, like, you know, about like the eggplant thing.
No, I think it was just because, you know, you write it in such a way that you can see the mom's you understand why she totally misunderstood what the conversation was about, and like having Mehdi explain it to her, I'm just like, oh god, that would be so awkward.
Yes, totally. Yes.
So in the book, you know, Mehdi is part of this big family and they had this family business where they all kind of handle a different part of wedding planning. What made you want to sort of have that, the wedding planning business, be the family business?
That's because I was a wedding photographer a very long time ago. And so, you know, there's like this writing advice that's like, you know, write what you know. And so I was like, oh yeah, I'll write about that because I know weddings. I love weddings. And it would be a great way to show, you know, more of like the Chinese Indonesian culture. I know exactly like what a wedding photographer should be doing. So that's why.
That makes sense. So how did you get from being a wedding photographer to being a writer?
Well, I was a wedding photographer in England, and that was really nice. But then we moved to Jakarta, and Indonesian weddings are so huge, right? Like they're at least they at least have like 2,000 people, and so I would have to join like a proper photography company to be able to continue doing wedding photography. I wouldn't be able to do it solo. So then I decided I don't really want to do that, and I decided to just focus on writing.
Had you been writing before that then, like while being a photographer?
Yeah. It was kind of the perfect job to have because the weddings would go on in the weekends, and so my weekdays were free for me to write. So yeah, would highly recommend for those who are writing and thinking of a side hustle.
That's true. That would be a pretty good setup. Yeah, the size of like a wedding being that big is somewhat overwhelming. I can't even imagine. I mean, I understand like that's sort of just the cultural expectation, but I'm like, I had a hard time with 100 people at my wedding. I can't imagine thousands of people.
Well, my husband and I had 1,500 at ours because he is English, so he doesn't know like 1,000 people to invite. And my parents were like humiliated. They were just like, "Oh gosh, we can't, like, 2,000 is like the bare minimum. Like, can't he just come up with, 500 more people?" And I was like, "No, that's not how normal, like, normal people behave. Like, they don't just conjure up, 500 guests out of nowhere."
Yeah, I wouldn't even like how would you even just randomly come up with that many guests? Yeah. That would be hard. That would be hard.
We still haven't forgiven him.
Oh. But I think, that's sort of one of the things I think, Mehdi is sort of dealing with is this being raised in more of a Western culture, but also having this Asian family side and trying to find that balance of who she is, especially because as a girl, there are different expectations placed on her than her male cousins, which I thought was interesting and something I wasn't very familiar with.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's very true for a lot of cultures, not just like Asian ones, but I do like notice that, there are very different expectations placed on us. Like the men are expected to, do everything that they can for their careers, whereas the women are kind of more expected to be like, oh, you'll stay close, to the parents and kind of be a more nurturing role for them.
Yeah, because that does come up in the book where, she's, and like that's part of what happens with the breakup that happens early in the book where, yeah, she's sort of in this position of needing to choose kind of between her family and her boyfriend. You have written young adult books as well, and I'm curious what made you want to write an adult novel?
I've been a YA writer. All of my previous books were young adult. And then I thought, okay, I'm gonna make I actually wrote an outline for Dial A for Aunties, which was young adult. But then I just kept thinking, like, but why would this happen? Like, how can I set it at a big wedding? Like, how can she be part of a wedding? And so I was like, okay, I'm just gonna have to make it adult, I think. And it was so intimidating because which is really ridiculous because I'm in my mid-30s, but I felt like, oh, I don't know how to adult, I don't know how to write adult characters. But I guess it worked out okay in the end.
Yeah, that would have been a very different book if it had been written for young adults. Yeah. Some of the stuff I don't think would have worked quite as well.
Yeah, I think
So,
so.
now that you have written one adult book and it's doing very well. I mean, it was, Netflix has the film rights. Do you think you'll be writing more?
Oh yeah, totally. So I have finished the sequel to Dial A for Aunties, and that will be out next year. So that's super exciting. And I've also written an adult suspense, which is very different. It's really, really dark. So we don't know yet what will happen to that book. So that's going to be an adventure.
But at least if it's a suspense, you can kill people and it won't be super weird.
Right? Like out of nowhere. Totally. Yes. I kill a lot more people in that one.
I think that's so funny that a friend called you out on that. I mean, you just like, you know, if you just like killing people, you like killing people. I mean, that's.
Yeah, you gotta let out, you know, all the anger or like frustration that you have somehow, you know. And I feel like as women, we have a lot of anger.
You know what? And that's actually a good point. I know I don't want to like give any like everything away about the book, but you know, the murder that happens with the blind date, there are reasons leading up to that I think is something that a lot of women have had experience with or have had friends who have had that experience. And so yeah, you don't really feel bad exactly about the guy dying.
Was actually something that Nanachka Khan, who is going to be directing the movie, there was something she mentioned where she was like, oh, you know, I think that the whole movie should be like really comedic except for that scene, where, you know, I think we want to approach it as a really serious scene, because that is something that does happen to so many women around the world. And I was like, oh wow, yeah, you know, she totally gets it, that is a very serious issue. So I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, also her aunt's reactions to it was so kind of affirming, I think, you know, they're being like, this isn't your fault essentially, which isn't always the message that we get in the media about those situations. So that was, I thought, a really great part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't know if we've ever had anyone on the podcast who has had like their film rights bought by Netflix. Like, what is that like?
It's so unreal. It went the way that it happened was very unreal, because my book agent, she just sent it out to publishers, and then she started getting calls from film agents about it. And she was like, how did you hear about it? Because I only sent it out to publishers. And they were like, it's a secret, I can't tell you. So that was all very like, wow, okay, what's going on, you know? And then we signed with a film agent. And then it very quickly, like, we had talks with production companies, and then it went to auction with like the film studios. So it was just all really, really very unreal. And, you know, when I made my decision to go with Netflix, I like burst into tears as I was like telling my film agent, like, which studio I wanted to go with, because it was such an emotional moment. I was like, oh, I want Netflix. Very uncool.
No, I think that's very cool. I think that, you know, I think that just shows how attached you are to your story and how important it is that you want to make sure it gets in the hands of the right people. I feel like anyone would cry in that situation.
Yeah, but I feel really good about it. I think Netflix is the right home for it.
Are you going to be involved in any of the filmmaking side, from like, you know, casting or script or anything?
I don't think I get a say in the casting, but with the script writing, the script writer is Courtney Kang, and she's been amazing. And she's been emailing me with questions like, oh, what Indonesian phrases would they say in this situation? You know, like if they were good surprise, or if they were bad surprise, you know, what would they say? So it's just really, really nice to have these questions come up, because I feel like she is being really detailed with her work.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And like to have, you know, like that, that authenticity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I have to, I always like to ask, were you a big reader when you were a kid?
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. And I was like, really obnoxious about it too. Because a lot of my friends and cousins were not. And so it became like a source of pride for me to like carry a book around everywhere I went and, you know, make sure that everyone saw that I was reading. So, yeah, I was like a really obnoxious kid.
Yeah, actually, now I just realized I asked you if you had been writing for a while a photographer, even though I had said in the introduction that you have a master's degree in creative writing from Oxford. So clearly you had been writing for a while. So like, what was it like to be at Oxford for creative writing? Like that feels sort of, there just is something kind of magical that seems like that.
I know, right? Yeah, it was so intimidating. I feel like I went there a little bit too young. I was 23, I think.
Oh, wow.
And, and I feel like I didn't absorb as much as I would, like if I had gone, you know, like now when I'm much wiser, obviously. It was very intimidating, and there were like a handful of my classmates were just one, you know, those people, you know, that you just know they're just so talented. Like one of them became like a poet somewhere, I can't remember, but he had like some national award and stuff like that. So it was very scary to be in a room with these people.
I can see how that would be. Yeah. Pretty intimidating. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, just Oxford of all places, and it's just, there's something kind of, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. The second book will be set in Oxford.
Oh,
so I'm very excited about that.
Oh, I did mean to ask you, you said you had a sequel. Like, is there going to be like a trend with the titles? Cause you have A for Aunties as like the first one.
I know. I can't wait to share the title.
Okay.
We have a title, and it was so good. My editor at Berkeley came up with it, and it's just perfect. Everyone laughed when we saw it. So I can't wait to be able to share it.
Okay, that makes me very excited then. I will be on the lookout.
but I can tell you one of the rejected titles.
Okay.
My friend came up with it, and I thought it was brilliant, but they rejected it, and it's Dial Q for Cucumber. Come on.
That's kind of fun. That's fun.
Book 3.
There you go. There you go. Maybe by then you can get them to use that one.
Yeah.
Well, Jesse, I've had so much fun talking to you. The book is just, it is a fun book. It's like, it's just fun, you know? And so yeah. I hope our listeners, pick it up, cause it is out. And I just, as a final question, you know, what do you hope readers take away from reading Dial A for Aunties?
Well, first of all, I really hope that they have, a lot of fun and a lot of laughter from it. That's like the first and foremost. I was like, I really want to entertain people. And then the second thing is obviously, you know, I hope that they take it as like an introduction to Indonesian culture, and that they just kind of know a little bit more about it, and maybe like seek out an Indonesian restaurant, obviously after COVID is over, if there is one in your city, and try the food.
I will have to be on the lookout. I live in Cleveland, which has a pretty big mix of different ethnic restaurants. So I'll have to see if we have an Indonesian one. Jesse, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh, it's been so fun. Thank you so much for having me.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Adam Sokol and Jill Grunewald, and presented by Overdrive. For more information, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.